Oasis Audio presents Mission 5, Soul Survivor, by Sigmund Brouwer. Read for you by Adam Werner. Chapter 1. Cave in. The wheels of the robot body under my control hummed as the robot sped across the red, packed sands of the flat valley floor toward the hills about 5 miles from the dome. Thin Martian wind whistled around me, picking up the grains of sand that the robot wheels sent flying into the air. The sky was butterscotch-colored, the sun a perfect circle of blue. Thin streaks of light blue clouds hung above the distant mountain peaks. But I wasn't about to spend any energy appreciating the beauty of the Martian landscape. Not with a cave-in ahead, and desperate scientists waiting for whatever rescue attempt was possible. Robot bodies don't sweat with fear. But if they did, my own fear would have beaded on the shiny surface of the robot's titanium shell. While I was still in the dome, on a laboratory bed using X-ray waves to direct the robot body, all my thoughts were frantic with total fear and worry. Once before, I'd been sent on a rescue mission. A real rescue mission, instead of the usual virtual reality tests for the robot body that I'd spent years learning to handle as if it were my own body. The first rescue mission had been to search for only one person, lost in the cornfields of the science station's greenhouse. This time was just as real, and far more frightening. 2 hours earlier, 4 people in spacesuits had walked into a cave to take rock samples. They were searching for traces of ancient water activity and fossil bacteria. According to standard field procedure, they'd sent back their activities on real-time video transmissions, beamed directly to the dome. An hour later, only 60 minutes ago, the images and their voices had stopped abruptly, thrown into blackness and drowned out by a horrible rumbling that could only be caused by the collapse of the cave's ceiling. Now all that remained to give an indication of their location deep inside the rock were the signals thrown by the GPU in each of their spacesuits, a global positioning unit that bounced sound waves off the twin satellites that orbited Mars. 4 signals then beeped steadily, clustered together where the 4 people had been buried alive. If the weight of the rock had not crushed them, they had about 3 days to live. That was as long as their oxygen and water tubes would last. Back at the dome, a rescue team was being assembled. At best, they would be ready in another hour, which meant anything and everything I could do quickly with the robot might make a crucial difference in the survival rate of those 4 people trapped in the cave-in. Most terrifying of all, one of the GPU signals came from the spacesuit of my best friend, Rawling McTigre, director of the Mars Project. Chapter 2. Fast as my robot body moved toward the side of the cave-in, back in the dome, my body was totally motionless in the computer lab room. As usual, I was on my back on a narrow medical bed in the computer laboratory. I wore a snug jumpsuit in military navy blue. My head was propped on a large pillow so that the plug at the bottom of my neck didn't press on the bed. This plug had been spliced into my spine when I was barely more than a baby, so the thousands of microfibers of bioplastic material had grown and intertwined with my nerve endings as my own body had grown. Each microfiber had a core to transmit tiny impulses of electricity out through the plug into another plug, linked into an antenna sewn into the jumpsuit. Across the room, a receiver transmitted signals between the bodysuit antenna and the robot's computer drive. It worked just like the remote control of a television set, with 2 differences. Television remotes used infrared and were limited in distance. This receiver used X-ray waves and had a 100-mile range. As for handling the robot body, it wasn't much different than the sophisticated virtual reality computer games that Earth kids had been able to play for decades. In virtual reality, you put on a surround sight helmet that gives you a 3-dimensional view of a scene in a computer program. The helmet is wired so that when you turn your head, it directs the computer program to shift the scene, as if you were there in real life. Sounds come in like real sounds. Because you're wearing a wired jacket and gloves, the arms and hands you see in your surround sight picture move wherever you move your own arms and hands. With me, the only difference is that the wiring
Sample complete. Ready to continue?